years and kind of fine-tune over a couple of years. And so it isn't, I mean, the process is just kind of predetermined in a sense by what's required by the law.
Did you make any specific changes? Because the stuff, like you said, is pretty much dictated by due process.
Let me kind of flip through. One, in the very beginning purpose of the chapter, this chapter provides procedures for the formal review of written determinations by Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired Personnel concerning the provision of vocational rehabilitation services. I want to add to blind individuals. And actually I see a comma there now that needs to be out. This chapter is intended to implement, and then it goes on into some details. There's a bunch of changes we need to make about tabs in this one. We didn't quite have that down to a science yet when we were doing this one. Well, and the other thing too is I knew that chapter one was going to be huge, and I did not want to get all three of them to you at once. So that's why I shot these other ones to you sooner.
Yeah, that's a fine thing.
Let's see. But this one was pretty well crafted earlier on, so I don't think there were any changes, but let me check. Through each page and
I don't know if it's disruptive to you for me to
Hang
ask
on.
A question.
I'm almost done, so okay. Right. No, there weren't anything other notes I had made. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. On the 408 where it says the upon the person's receipt of the filing, it has to do with the director mailing the thing out to the person. And, you know, how do you decide when that actually, what the date of whatever happened actually is in that instance?
Let me read the section so we all know what we're talking about. After appointment of the hearing officer, the director shall serve a copy of the petition and a notice to file responsive pleading on each respondent listed in the petition personally or by first class or certified mail. Written proof of such service shall be filed with the director. Each respondent who chooses to file a responsive pleading must do so within 20 calendar days from the date of personal service or the date of director mailing of the petition. I would say that the date referred to would be the postmark date.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because on stuff like that, if there isn't a provable thing, people get into disagreement
well,
about
Well, attorneys, what, do you, is that clear
say,
or?
In legal courts, you do a certificate of mailing, mm-hmm. which just says I certify that I've this date I've mailed first class mail. That's just part of the petition or motion or whatever you're sending. You just have that part of the whole document.
The day you were
certified a copy and so forth.
Well, that certified a mailing. You just certify that you mailed to whoever and the address you mailed it to and the date you mailed it on.
And actually, that is this sentence I'm going to read, but maybe we need your wording instead of this. It says, written proof of such service that is, you know, shall be filed within... or with the director.
I certify that on the such and such date, a copy of the true and correct copy of the so-and-so deposited in the United States mail addressed to so-and-so. Mm-hmm.
But that would be from the director. That wouldn't be from the recipients. Mm-hmm. So that's where I got confused, because part of it speaks to the recipients and part of it speaks to the director, and I couldn't figure out which took precedence.
Oh. Well, the respondent files within 20 days.
Okay.
So that would be their postmark and this postmark. But Bob, could could you say again the wording you said a minute ago about a statement of certification?
Yeah, I mean, certification of mailing will be provided, I guess, to the director, that a true and accurate copy, or, you know, I suppose you could make a copy of it. But like I said, when I do legal stuff, you put the certificate of mailing just as at the bottom of whatever you're doing. So if you're responding or petition or whatever you're sending out, you just at the bottom, you just do a heading certificate of mailing.
Okay. But do we need the other stuff you were saying, Bill, about to and in the U.S. mail and that? Or can we just say certification of mailing?
That's legal certification when it was part of the United States mail.
Yeah, that's just the language, first class mail.
Yeah.
Okay, but you weren't saying I need that in here.
It was mailed to so-and-so on such and such a day, you have to have that.
Right.
Just put a certificate of mailing was provided, a certificate of mailing of the, you know, what are we talking about here? The petition or the response?
Foregoing whatever it was.
A certificate of mailing of the legal document will be provided to the director for records or...
Shall be filed with the director. That I think we can leave the same.
And then the definition of a certificate of mailing, that's, I don't necessarily think has to be spelled out. I think it's a state of art. I mean, it's a...
Yep.
Okay.
So the respondent has to do whatever within 20 days of whenever that certificate that's filed with the director says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what does, including the last day of the period, I think it's in 411, including the last day of the period, what does that mean?
In computing time prescribed or allowed by this chapter of these rules and regulations, or by any applicable statute in which the method of computing time is not specifically provided, days will be computed by excluding the day of the act or event and including the last day of the period. If the last day of the period falls on a Saturday, Sunday, or state holiday, the period shall include the next working day. So, if I mail it to you on the 1st, then your 20 days starts the 2nd. Mm-hmm. Right. And it goes up to and including whatever 20 days is from the 2nd. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
That makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
That wording is not mine. That's from
I knew that had to go some legalese somewhere.
That's legalese, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I just struggle with that kind of language.
I know it. Anything else in this one?
I think it's fine. I mean, it's just standard boilerplate, this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I'm just a...
No, I mean, this is torturous.
I'm just a consumer.
And I appreciate all your time, but I think it's really good to have those kinds of questions because we want it to be right. I mean, it is quite a process, and we're just getting started.
That's why we applied to be commissioners.
Right.
To do this,
that's right. So Barbara, your questions and points are very good. Did you have anything else in this one?
Yeah. On 6.2b, I was wondering if that should be the Board of Commissioners. Is that what we were talking? Is that
the members of the? Okay. 6.2 is the hearing officer shall be selected from among a pool of qualified persons identified jointly by, the Nebraska Commission of the Blind and Visually Impaired. That means staff, me, the director. And B, the members of the commission governing board. Yes, that means you all.
It just seems like we ought to call ourselves something consistent over time that we can
The definition, that might be one we want to look at. Okay, board shall mean the governing board of the commission to be appointed by the governor. According to state law. So, members of the commission governing board. Now, let me see what we say in these other chapters 3. Chapter 3 doesn't have board or commission board, but of course, chapter 3 is about vending, so. We wouldn't really expect it. Look in chapter 1. B- board shall mean the governing board of the commission to be appointed by the governor of Nebraska pursuant to Nebraska Revised Statute 718604. So that's a little more technical. Board shall mean the governing board of the commission to be appointed by the Nebraska, governor of Nebraska according to state law. Well, maybe the definitions are close enough, and the question is, then we get into the text, should it just be the members of the commission board instead of governing? For the most part, Barbara, I don't think I've used governing.
Yeah, it hasn't, mostly.
So maybe that's why it kind of stuck out.
Like, yeah.
Just get rid of that word, does that sound good to everybody?
Mm-hmm. Well, I always call us board of commissioners, because that way, I mean, it's simple, and it doesn't go into all that.
The only reason in,
you know, whatever.
And I usually do, I mean, I use that term quite a bit as well, but in this, the writing of all of this, I tried to get it to where I was calling you all the board.
Board, yeah.
Just to make it.
Yeah, but so it seems like if we just said the, you know, the definition of board is board of commissioners appointed by the governor.
Okay.
Instead of all that other whatever.
So if we say the hearing officer should be selected jointly by, and actually should it be a, the executive, the director of the Nebraska Commission,
right,
and then the members of the board.
How about like recommended by the executive director and approved by the members of the board?
Well, that would be a different process, and the process we've agreed on is that we would jointly approve. So it's not a big difference, but I think it does change the process.
So this section is about approval, right? Because it was jointly appointed.
It's actually it's neither. It's we will select the hearing officer from among a pool of qualified persons identified jointly by. It's basically staff and the board.
We identified those guys last year sometime.
So the director.
But the process was that, you know, the commission staff came up with a pool of people and then we approved them.
Okay.
That is
what we
did. We
just used the same people as the Voc rehab part.
Yeah. But I mean, the procedure was that, and so that may be what we would want to put in the.
Stay with current practice. Then.
Seemed like something somewhere said that's what we were supposed to do. That's why we did it.
Okay.
What that was.
Yeah, I think you're right too. So selected from among a pool of qualified persons. Who have been. I don't know, it just seems like it muddies the.
I think just leave it as it is. I mean, it's
identified jointly. I guess that allows for either way, but.
I mean, as long as we come up with names and we agree on it, that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm. Is that sound okay, Carlos?
It sounds to me it's just that I'm trying to predict or try to avoid that if somebody wants to give us a hard time. You know, sometimes like crazy people think, well, no, I didn't see the board selecting this, they just approved. And some people just want to give hard time.
Mm-hmm.
But in that case, there are other ways to deal with that too. You know, just to say, okay, we will.
No matter how meticulous they are, there's somebody that comes up with an interpretation.
Yeah, that's true
you
too.
Just can't get, you can't eliminate.
Well, I guess the only, you know, the thing that I thought we did, and it was based on something that I wish I could remember. There has to be, I mean, the buck has to stop somewhere, and I guess that's the thing that we want to be sure that we acknowledge that. I mean, we, you know, identify jointly or whatever, but we, you know, I don't know that we would ever have a disagreement over somebody who was recommended, but the bottom line is, if we did...
Well, those names we chose meant nothing to us anyway, they were just on a list.
Now, see, I thought what it meant is that, let's say there was a name on there who either I, the director, or one of you, the board, really did not want on there, that that person wouldn't be there. That's why I thought the identified jointly was important, regardless of where it, who made the original recommendation. To me, that was the key, was that there would not be anybody in that pool of hearing officers that either the director or the board was opposed to.
Well, you could put agreed to unanimously between the director and the board. Yeah. That way, if there's anybody anybody disagrees with, then...
I'm a little nervous about change. It seems to me like the language
came from somewhere.
Came from something, and I can't.
That's what I'm concerned about too.
I think getting rid of, cleaning up who we refer to. Actually, I think it's in the act. Now that I think about it.
I know we had a controversy over Dick Spencer that one time.
Well, there could easily be.
I was opposed to him.
Yeah, and we didn't
so
approve
it. Didn't approve.
Right, that's what I was going to say. And we will never get in trouble, so we're not going to use them.
That's right.
Dangerous word. Never.
Never say never.
That's a long time.
Well, my control F doesn't work as well. Visually, so.
Well, you're looking for that. Can I do first a couple things?
Well, I would say just find one definition and use it every
Fritz.
Place.
See, Fritz, Dorothy is needing something, I think.
Call our friends and tell them we're not going to be there by 4. He warned me.
Well, I do appreciate you taking the extra time.
No, that's no problem.
Well, I don't seem to find it. Let me maybe rephrase the question. Is anybody violently opposed to the words identified jointly? Shall be selected from a pool of qualified persons identified jointly.
No, I think that's
good.
That's good.
Okay. Then I want to leave that the way it is. Because we both have a sense that that is from something for some reason, and so I'd rather leave it unless somebody, you know, if you really object to it, we'll do the research. But no. And then jointly by the director of the commission and the members of the board. Okay. What else? On that one.
Well, I have a note here that I didn't explain to myself. It just says, what does 8.05E mean?
Well, let's see if we can answer that. 8.05E, that's under the section of official record. Except to the extent that the Administrative Procedure Act, isn't it procedures? Procedures, I'm sure that's Act, pardon me, or another statute provides otherwise, the commission record shall constitute the exclusive basis for commission action in contested cases under the Act for judicial review thereof. Well, I believe that means that if some other entity or person kept record of something, that the basis for our action is in our records, not some other entity. Would that be a right, a correct interpretation? Oh, legal eagles?
I would think so.
Yeah, that's how I would interpret it.
And now you understand it completely,
so
right?
So whatever the petitioner or the person bringing the complaint thought might be the case wouldn't if make any...
If it's contrary to written, then it wouldn't have any force.
Well, of course, this is what's defining the official record. They would bring in their story, their records, and the court would, fight about the two. I mean, the process would be fighting about the two, but in referring to what is the official record,
because the official record goes up for on appeal, so you don't have, you just have one record,
right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
Thank you. And in 903, a lot of the other things had mentioned the preferred format, but that one doesn't.
Okay. Parties to the proceeding shall be notified of the decision and order in person or mail. A copy of the decision, you're right, we missed it there. Really, since so much of this had to do with information getting to and from people, that's why I put a lot of emphasis on preferred format.
And I'm glad, because
I'm glad
those kinds
them.
Of things are hard to find somebody to to read.
Yep, that's right.
Yourself.
So, shall be notified of the decision and order in person or by mail, comma, in the individual's preferred format. I think that's the language I've been using. Thank you.
That's the last thing I have on that.
Anybody else?
I make a motion, then we accept it and move it on to the
second.
Is there discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, it's now about 3:00. We have one more chapter and then the old and new business, which probably won't take a long time. Would people like to have a break? You want to go to the end? What do you want to do?
Let's charge on.
Charge on, yeah.
Okay.
We make a, speaking of charge, we'll make a quick telephone charge call. So we got to be done by 4:00 because that's what I'm going to come into.
I think that's doable, I believe. How are you doing, Jan?
I would thank you.
Jan wants double
you
time.
You have the big over there. Jan ain't eating her lunch.
Hello. Plan on 4:00. For sure. Yeah. Barb Walker's going to pound the gavel down at 4:00, sure.
Right.
See you later.
Okay. Now, the vending.
When it talks about the blind vendor program and other kind of derivatives or whatever, are we calling that Nebraska Business Enterprises now? Or is that just the term that's used within the program?
The latter is correct. The business enterprises or enterprise is what we use as our internal word about it. Mm-hmm. But this is referring to the blind vendor program.
Okay.
So, yeah. And actually, this is the one that we actually have had rule about under HHS and even under DPI. The rule that we had, however, had never even been brought up to date with the 98 amendments. And so work had been done on it, and then it went through. With HHS, they have a long, you think ours is long, of steps to go through, but all kinds of steps within HHS. And they actually had gone through a good part of it and through the word processing unit, and were almost to the point to go to a hearing when LB 352 was in the works, and they just sent it back to Terry Harris and said, we're not going to do any more work on this. You guys are trying to get out of here. We're done. And so so then we figured, too, there was no point in us working on it till things were more in place and we found out if we were going to be a commission and so forth. So, a lot of it is what it was, but there are also some significant changes that we'll talk about. So go ahead and what comments or questions do you have?
Let's see, I had a question about the 1-002 is the way it was written in the version that I read.
Right.
Get
rid of all those first ones.
Yeah, okay.
But the 002, those are definitions. Which one?
Well, all it said was 1-002. There was the last section, vending machine income.
Yes.
I wondered what it meant.
Yes. That is a very specific term. It does not mean the income the vendors make on vending machines.
Okay.
It is a legal term which is when there are, there really are none in Nebraska like this now, but in some cases there's a blind vendor in a building and there's also some other vendor who in fact competes with the blind vendor. And that's there because the building or the agency or whomever has an agreement and that's what they're doing and that's that. Well, so all receipts of that competitor's operations, after deducting the cost of goods sold, including reasonable service and maintenance, etc., where the machines are operated, etc., I already said that. It refers to all the receipts on those other machines of the competitor. And later on, it talks about why we want to know that term, and that is in Section 8, that all vending machine income, remember, is dispersed to the state licensing agency, that's the commission, mm-hmm. by a property managing department under, it's something within the law that requires a shared portion of that income to come to us. So if you're going to compete with our blind vendor, we're going to get a piece of your action.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a suggestion or question on my phone. I didn't write down the exact number, but it talks about when within state or local buildings, the vendors have to be over, 19 years old or older.
Mm-hmm.
And I went as a immigrant. They mentioned that you have to be a citizen in order to be part of the vending program. Now, the Randolph Chipper Act mentioned that you have to be a citizen because that's for federal buildings,
mm-hmm.
which is according to the law, but for state buildings and local buildings, I don't think we should have that. So maybe next to those state buildings or local buildings, they have to be 18 years old. And they don't have to be citizens, but being residents, you know, for something to that effect.
I would have to go back and check the law, because I thought these requirements for licensing were from the law.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if we don't agree with them, we can't change them. And I'm willing to go back and check, and if it's not from the law, then we would need to revisit and discuss that.
Do you mean from LB 352?
No, from
Randolph.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, right, but the Randolph is for federal buildings, not for state.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Right.
So I would think, though, that the law, this Nebraska statute, would probably piggyback a lot of the language from the Randolph-Shepard.
Right, which is okay. And I think I'm talking more as an immigrant, okay, in this case, so try to understand.
To look at the Nebraska state, have you looked at the Nebraska state statute?
I mean,
well, there isn't we don't have a little Randolph-Shepard.
There is none.
Oh, we don't, okay, so it's just just the way it's been set up.
Let's see what 8611 says. for the purpose of providing blind persons with remunerative employment and large commission shall administer and operate vending facility programs pursuant to federal Randolph Shepherd Act as amended. Blind persons licensed by its authorized to operate. Yeah, it leaves it open. Well, what if we,
do what we did on the relative thing and leave that part off?
No, I don't think we can just leave it off because it is relevant to vending operations within federal buildings. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
What if requirements for licensing the 301B citizen of the United States as required by law, whatever,
for federal,
as required by it, for federal buildings, but I just thought of a little, and not for non-federal. Okay, the trouble though, okay, let's say you get licensed, we license you. We license you as a vendor. We don't license you to be the vendor in the federal building.
Yeah.
And so once you're a vendor, and then there's another opening and we give that up to bids, and that one's in the federal building, and you put in a bid for that, you're already licensed. So that would cause a problem.
Well, to me, that's what immigrants face, like when blind people face and they require a driver license. How about if you're not able to drive when you're required to drive for this and this? In those cases, immigrants who are not citizens will understand and not necessarily take the federal building, but only when they are not federal. That's how I see it.
Well, we need to add. I mean, we need to add something specific to that.
There'd have to be evidence of a green card or something. You'd have to, pin that down somehow or other.
Yeah. Legal resident. Mm-hmm.
Legal resident. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's all that's required for the commission to provide services. They'd be a legal resident.
Not even that. But to work, you have to be legal.
Legal resident. Yeah.
To work.
But this within the vending program is very specific and different. So that's why it didn't come up in the others.
And that's going to become a big issue now, I think.
Oh, sure.
All of the concern that...
Well, there's the... Okay, requirements for lodging. There's blind as defined by the rules. Citizen certified by state VR agency as qualified. And then D is if the vending facility is on non-federal property at least 19 years of age. Right. So what if we add E, if the vending facility is on non-federal property, legal residents, yes, let's see if we can come up with the language here.
Non-citizen legal resident, or whatever order that goes in.
Are you all comfortable with that while we work on this wording? I mean, does the idea seem like a good...
It does to me.
And I think it's a good idea. On federal property.
But there are now more people that want to be vendors than there are vendor slots.
Yeah, I think so. And the only reason why there are not enough vending slots is because there is not enough money. We can create several.
Okay. E if the vending facility is on non-federal property, a legal resident, even if not...
A non-citizen legal resident.
A documented legal resident would take in your green card the whole bit. Take it to a documentation.
A non-citizen legal resident, I think, would cover one of them.
Yeah.
Non-citizen authorized to work, maybe, because there are some residents who are authorized to work.
That's true.
Temporary residents. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they don't call it green card anymore because the card is not green anymore.
So a non-citizen...
Legal resident with
authority to work. Who is authorized to work.
Right, legally authorized to work.
Legally authorized to work, thank you.
I don't think it's going to be a big problem anyway. But you have to cover the angles.
Mm-hmm. And we're presuming this is a blind person. I mean, did we put blind in every
that's
other?
That's number eight.
Okay.
Gotta be blind.
Just looking for my next career, you know.
Oh, you're looking out for yourself, huh?
Come on, boy.
Boy, you can add, I wouldn't deal with the public on a bit. No matter what.
Okay. What else?
Well, I had put, why doesn't the 3 in 00301 say Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired?
301 is requirements for licensing. The state licensing agency may issue licenses. So where, what are you? I think it's just because the Randolph-Shepard Act uses the terminology state licensing agency and SLA. That is a definition, and it's just makes it consistent with all language of Randolph-Shepard stuff. And
yeah,
because there might be a rehab agency that's not the state licensing agency, that some other entity that operates the Randolph-Shepard program, for example. But we are the state licensing agency. So that terminology is used throughout.
Okay, and then there was something that seemed to suggest to me that it was saying something about vendors are responsible for minor repairs as long as there is no cost to them.
Okay, yes, 502. Each vendor, as a part of his or her day-to-day duties, shall take reasonable care of the equipment in his or her vending facility, and notwithstanding anything in 0501, is responsible for routine maintenance and minor repairs, provided that no expenses are incurred by the vendor. That's Randolph-Shepard. And if they have to hire somebody to fix something because we can't get out there, they send us the bill.
Oh, and that's what that means.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, this, I'm going to show my dumbness again, but in that 801, did that mean that only blind vendors with federal sites get income from those facilities not operated by a blind person that meet the criteria of the program? Or would that go to all, does it
okay.
go to all vendors, whether or not they work on a federal?
The vending machine income comes into us, and then we disperse it. All vending machine income from vending machines on federal property, which is dispersed to the state licensing agency under the vending machine income sharing provision, shall accrue to each blind vendor operating a vending facility on such federal property. Well, I had thought that it meant the income that came in was then dispersed out to all the blind vendors in the state
system.
Program, but that makes it look like then it goes to that other guy over there that we're competing with. You know, if it's the federal building and there's Ray, the blind vendor, and then Jack's vending, the income would be accruing to Ray, the blind vendor. I don't know, but whatever it means, Terry Harris, I'm sure, could tell you, oh yeah, that's this, but...
And whatever that means, we really can't change it.
No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
So. I'm sure of that.
Okay. Okay.
A lot of this then really is a reflection right from the Randolph Shepherd Act.
Yes.
What kinds of, routine problems come up within the vending that, there's a rule already there for, but, what are the big problems that generally come up get dealt with all the time?
Well, probably the biggest is getting accurate reports, and we've never had any real teeth or even any requirements around that. We've just tried to do the best we could in reporting and everything else, even when the vendors didn't provide us with what we needed. And so that is a real thing that's new in this chapter, and that there is some teeth about when someone can lose their license or be fined. And I'll talk about my changes after we get through.
I'm done with mine.
Okay. But I want to go in sequence so that I don't miss something. So if you don't mind, I'll go to that when we get there. Okay, Bob?
Sure.
Okay. Let's see. Some of these a couple of suggestions from a vendor, which was very nice, and also some things that Fatosh, Terry, and I saw after the fact. The 304A5 did read failure to submit required reports to the SLA in 2 consecutive months or for 5 or more months in 1 calendar year. It's been suggested we change it, and I think this change is better. Failure to submit the required monthly reports to the SLA by the 20th of the succeeding month in 2 consecutive months or for a 5 or more months in a 12-month period. Because if you just do calendar year, you can be late till October, and then...
Yep.
So I thought that was very smart. That was a vendor's idea.
Makes sense.
I mean, it seems to me that 5 is a lot.
I think so, too. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, we haven't had any before. And I think the...
I would say 3. If they got 2 consecutive, 3 months in a year, that's a quarter
of the... That's a quarter of the...
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
I mean, they need to,
I'm okay with that. We've really had a problem.
They have to show some responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And 5 is too many. I mean, that's... Mm-hmm. They could really slough off a lot.
You can get into a lot of trouble in 5 months.
Well, and actually, that's a good point, because part of the reason that the agency does stay involved and that the Randolph Shepherd is there is because the BE staff have a role in helping that individual to work through issues that, and where we have really run into problems, the person's ready for bankruptcy and boy, they're in all kinds of mess. And it's not so much that we can have our little reports just on time because we are the bureaucrats, but if it gets out of hand and then there's no fixing it. So I'm good with 3 months. Is that what y'all want to?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
That sounds good.
Let's make it 1 month.
Yeah, for 1 or more months.
Okay. The discretion of the assistant director.
Yeah. Chop off their heads. Off with their heads, that's what I get to say. Oh, goody. I got to say that's pretty fun. Okay. Then there was a suggestion that, the committee is 5 members And they were wanting it to be seven vendors to comprise the committee. And Terry said, well, the reason it's five is we've had trouble even getting five some years. And of course, now there are more vendors. And as things change, we may have more vending opportunities in the future. So I was thinking, instead of changing five to seven, we could, this is 0601, composition of committee. The state licensing agency shall form a state committee of blind vendors.